apologies to the people in Mexico. I think I still have an SMS that says old assembly, 10 o'clock. So that's how I sent my travel from the village. I apologize. Nonetheless, everyone is here. I also don't see any need for introductions. We don't have new faces. I see familiar faces here. Okay. All right. We only have two agenda items for today. One. No, it's two. This one, like, it's the compliance with financial disclosure framework and detecting corruption through the use of whistleblowing mechanism. But it's two. It's divided into two. Yeah. So it's two agenda items. Because it's a, you all have documents, members. Okay. Can we then deal with agenda? I mean, apologies. Is there any? Okay. Rest of it.
Thank you, Chair. Two apologies from our side. The ones of Honorable Lovemore, her husband has been taken to hospital. And the other one's Honorable Mutau, due to other work commitments. Thank you.
Okay. Moses, Mutau, and Lovemore. Minor. Okay. Honorable Chair, Honorable Nyami Boy, and Matthew Wazana, they are attending other parliamentary duties. And Honorable Marvin, he's slightly late, but I think he won't gonna make it on time. So, but he did report that he might not come to this meeting due to other commitments relating to work here. Oh, okay. Okay. Minister Ramaswamy and Deputy Minister Zorro, they are attending cabinet meeting, and Mr. Nabe as well. Mr. Nabe. Okay. I'm not attending. if you're listening, I said minister and deputy. So, Nabe, I just said minister. So, Mr. Nabe, so I won't be able to join us. But he did not tell us what we are doing, but then we have a late meeting. But, welcome, Commissioner. Are you going to take us through the presentation? Okay. All right. Over to you then. Velma, is everything okay? Okay.
Right. Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, good morning. I will be talking to the presentation, but from where I will be leading. We are dealing with the compliance with the financial disclosure framework for the 2014-2015 financial year. In terms of Chapter 3C of the Public Service Regulations, all SMS members are required to disclose their registrable interests, ED companies and properties to the executive authorities not later than 30 April. Then executive authorities are obliged to send copies to the Public Service Commission by 31st May. Preliminary statistics were presented to this committee during September 2015, and the final statistics that we are presenting today is up to 31st March 2016. I've been showing the trends for the past five financial years, which is 2010-2011, we were at 68%. 2011-12, there was some improvement. 2012-2013, we had 84%, and 2013-2014, we had 85%. Then 2014-2015, there was a slight decrease of 3%. Submission of financial disclosure forms for the 2014-2015 financial year. Here we are showing the stats of the number of forms received, and also the ones that are outstanding after validation with departments for the 2014-2015 financial year. With national departments, we have 5,800 SMS members, and number of forms submitted manually, not using the e-disclosure, we had 142, and 4,122 were submitted via e-disclosure, and number of forms outstanding was 1,536, 76, then which is 74%. Then with Eastern Cape, we had 96% submission rate. Free State, 74%. Gauteng, 96%. KZN, 99%. I hope Matubana, if she was here, she would see that the province has improved from the past, because in the past it was dismal. Then Limpopo, 98.6%. Mpumalanga, 97%. Northern Cape, 100%. Northwest, 87%. Western Cape, 100%. Then when we look now at the overall provincial submission, it's at 95%, and the country is at 82%. National departments recorded 74% where at the total complaints rate in respect of provincial departments was at 95% by the due date. And I've said that Northern Cape and Western Cape had a 100% compliance rate. Then there are some departments, but we did mention the departments, both at national and provincial level, that did not submit a single form, financial disclosure form, by the due date. It's not that they did not submit altogether, but the due date is 31st May. So by that date, they did not submit hardly a single form. So we had 11 national departments that did not submit financial disclosure forms by the due date, which is Environmental Affairs, Correctional Services, Higher Education and Training, Human Settlement, IPIT, National School of Government, National Treasury, Public Enterprise, Public Service and Administration, Sports and Recreation, Trade and Industry. Provincial departments that did not submit financial disclosure forms were 7. In Free State, we had 2, Education and Economic Development, Tourism and Environmental Affairs. In Gauteng, we had 1, Community Safety. In KZN, we had the Royal Household. Limpopo, we had 2, Agriculture, Safety, Security and License. Northwest, we had the Office of the Premier. Then there are departments that are regarded as repeat offenders, meaning that for 2 consecutive years, they did not submit forms by the due date. We have Higher Education and Training, Human Settlement, National School of Government, Public Enterprise, and Public Service and Administration. In KZN, we have Royal Households. Then, 8 departments submitted their disclosure forms by the due date, but did not achieve 100% compliance rate. We have Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries at 99%, Agriculture at 18%, COPTA at 95%, International Relations 99%, Justice 83%, Labour at 98%, National Treasury at 11%, Women at 99%. Then employees within departments submitted their financial disclosure forms timely to their respective EAs, but some were not received by the Public Service Commission by the due date. It's not that the officials did not submit, they did submit on time, but only to find that their respective EAs did not submit to them by the due date to the Public Service Commission. Environmental affairs, one can see that the official did comply, 100% of them did submit. Correctional service, 73% submitted. Higher education submitted by the due date, 72% of the officials. Human settlement is 20%. IT is 38%. NSG is 67%. National treasury 89%. Public enterprise 44%. PSA 90%, Sports and Recreation 72%, Trade and Industry 89%. There are departments that still did not submit 100% as at the end of the 2014-15 financial year, that is 31st March 2016. We have Correctional Services, which is at 0. Agriculture and Fisheries is 99%, Defense also 0, Higher Education is at 92%, human segment is at 25%, IT is at 42%, justice at 75%, labor at 99%, NSG at 0%, national treasury at 11%, state security 0%, we did not receive any bomb by the 2 days. Women 99%. We had 44 director generals at the national departments. Out of the 44, 35 did submit by the 2 days. 2 director generals submitted their financial disclosure forms to the EA after the 2 date, which is 30 April. The chief director general of military and veterans submitted on the 1st of June 2015, even after the 31st of May. And the director general of public enterprise submitted on 8th of May. Then we have 7 director generals that did not submit their financial disclosure forms by the 2 date. Some of the reasons is that some are suspended and some have already exited the system, the public service. Comparison, when we compare submission rate by provincial departments as at the due date, irrespective of 5 consecutive financial years, we see that 2010 we were at 75%, 2011-12 we were at 85%, 2012-2013 87%, 2013-14 there was a marked increase, which we were at 97%, and 2014-2015 there was a slight decrease of 2%. I did mention that Northern Cape and Western Cape, the submission rate was 800%. We had 3,377 SLS members who submitted their financial disclosure using the e-disclosure, whereas 572 submitted manually. This shows the state of readiness to utilize e-disclosure and how well it has been well received and embraced by senior management services members. Out of the 4,159 provincial SMS members, the total number of 3,959 financial disclosures or disclosure forms were received by the TSE by the due date. 210 financial disclosure forms were outstanding. This is a cause of concern. Parliamentary provincial legislators must hold the executive authorities accountable of the poorly performing departments to account, because to us 100% compliance rate is required by the due date. We don't need excuses. Then we have the updated statistics on the submission of financial disclosure forms by the provinces for the 2014-2015 financial year as at 31st March 2015. Eastern Cape number of SMS members is 700 and number of forms submitted manually is 421, e-disclosure 270, number of forms is 9 that are outstanding. We Free State, we don't have any form of spending, so they ended up being submitted 100%. And Hawking also is 100% out of the 774, all of them did submit by the 31st of March 2016. And KZN also reached the 100% compliance rate. Limpopo only one outstanding form, so they are at 29%. Mpumalanga, 3 outstanding forms, they are at 99%. Northern Cape 100%, Northwest 100%, and Western Cape 100%. By 31st March 2016, the submission rate was at 99.7%. Scrutiny of financial disclosure forms. Upon receipt of the financial disclosure forms, the TSC validated with the respective departments the total number of SMS members against the records held by the Public Service Commission. The TSC scrutinized 100% of the financial disclosure forms for the strict second consecutive year. This has been attributed to the increased capacity and decentralization of the activities relating to the management of conflict of interest to provincial offices. The disclosure forms were scrutinized in terms of subjectivity of the public service regulations to assess both compliance and whether the involvement of officials in any activities of the companies that would lead to potential and or actual conflicts of interest. The financial interests of SMS members who did not submit their financial disclosure forms were also scrutinized to assess their involvement in any activities of the companies that could lead to potential or actual conflict of interest. We used their ID to access the information from the CICC database and also the DIS Registry database. That's why we are able to scrutinize. Where applicable, consultations were conducted in terms of Chapter 3G1 of the Public Service Commission with FMS members who were found to be involved in activities that could be construed as posing conflict of interest. The purpose of the consultations were to verify the information at the PSC's disposal in order to substantiate the PSC's findings and recommendations. The individual department's reports were submitted to the respective executive authorities. The PSC will publish a consolidated report on the scrutiny conducted. We are towards the final process of that overview report. It will be called report on the overview of the financial disclosure framework for the 2014-2015 financial year. Some departments were not consulted due to the following reasons. Just like the Department of Water and Sanitation, they did submit a report on actions taken on the previous financial disclosure. The report contained the information required to finalize the scrutiny. That's why we did not go to consult, because we already had the information. The minister acted on the letter that was sent where that action has to be taken. The official of the Premier, the office of the Premier in the Eastern Cape informed the Public Service Commission that it will conduct the consultations with all the departments and submit the reports to the Public Service Commission. That's why the office in the Eastern Cape did not go and consult officials, individual officials in various departments, because the office of the Premier said they were going to do that. The NPA as no potential conflicts of interest were identified during the reporting period. We did consult them during the 2013-2014 financial year. SMS members, as the state security agency, did not submit their financial disclosure, and the PSC could not access their details as they are not on the personal system. And in the Northwest, the Department of Education and Sports and Development will not have available for consultation. Then SMS members at the Office of the Public Service Commission, they did respond to the chairperson about their financial interest during the 2013-2014 reporting period. The circumstances are still the same in the current reporting 2014-2015 financial year. In conclusion, what we can say is that we are concerned that there are still instances where designated officials submit their financial disclosure forms on time to their respective EAs, but the EAs delay in submitting the forms to the PSC. The obligation to submit the disclosure forms to the PSC rests with the EAs. EAs are under an obligation to report on actions that have been taken against transgressors, and where no action has been taken to provide reasons to the PSC. Thank you. That's the first report on compliance with the financial disclosure for the framework for the 2014-2015 financial year.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Just go to slide 18.
Okay.
Some departments were not consulted due to the following reasons. Department of Water Affairs, Water and Sanitation submitted the report on action taken on the previous financial disclosure. What does that mean? Does that mean the minister acted?
The minister acted.
Okay.
Mm. Because once we finalize the meeting and identify potential conflict of interest, we write to the minister. Where the official did not submit to say the minister has to take action. Where the official did give us and were not satisfied with the reason, say the minister has again to consult. So the minister compiled the report that she has to send to the PSC.
Okay.
So that's why there was no need for consultation.
Except for Northwest Department, they did nothing.
Northwest Department of Education and Sports Development were not available. The provincial office tried many times to say let's secure a date. Then they could not. So we said they have to keep on doing that. If not, they have to summon.
Okay. So generally, page 18 says, out of all the forms that you received, these are the possible conflicts that you have received, that you have identified.
No, we identified the loss in different departments,
okay.
But we wrote to the EA to NA. Where action has to be taken, the EA has to take action and report back to us. So Water and Sanitation did report,
okay.
But we are receiving other reports in bits and pieces,
okay.
By the action taken by EA.
Because, you know, I'm raising this because it would also be proper that when you report about instances where you suspect conflict, we should know exactly where,
okay.
And then don't choose which one to report about and leave the rest out. Even those who did not respond, I mean, for an example, you were able to say that Northwest Department of Education were not available for consultation. Why? What is the reason? Why didn't you mention other government departments or legislators if there are any? I think there is something that way. It will be complete for me.
Okay.
You understand?
I understand.
So, when we report in the next term, we want that. But I hope we can. We have to achieve 100%. That's what we need to fight for. Because it's like 13 or 13, 14 as a graph. I think it summarizes everything. It gives us action over a period of years since this model was introduced. It tells us that, can you go to the slide, Commissioner? I think 13 or 14. Yeah,
yes,
this
yes,
one. Yes. I think 2010, 2011, that's when the model was introduced.
Mm.
And then 2011, 2012, it went slightly up. 15, 18, also. 2013, 2014, we did that very well, 97%. So there's no reason for us to have dropped by how much?
2%.
2% is a lot. We supposed to have gained 2% in order for us to be at least 99 or 100, because that's what we expect. So it definitely has to change. So we have to talk about achieving 100% now. Whether EA is informed on time and all that, maybe you also need to change the way you communicate with the department, and then try to give them more time. I don't know when, at what point do you start communicating this information, and how much time do they have?
We start communicating with them in March because April the officials had to submit. The officials do submit, but the challenge is with the
So you communicate in March, the closing date is in April.
30 April for officials.
Yeah.
And for ministers it's 31st May.
Okay.
Ministers had 2 months.
But yeah, it's fine. Let's give everybody 2 months and see what happens. Because now the big issue here is about us getting everyone on board and people being able to do. Let's do that. I'm quite concerned about EAs that were given forms on time and who have never responded or never. What do they do? Authorize or they...
To authorize, to sign off the...
To sign off. I'm very concerned about that. But during the minister's budget speech, he did mention, in fact, public service is one of the departments that did not do well. We are disappointed about that, because they are they're supposed to lead by example. This is their focus. So if they're not taking this serious, then who are they going to hold accountable? So we are quite concerned about that as well. It's unfortunate that there's nobody from the department. Oh, she's from the department. Oh, okay. Sorry. Can you introduce yourself? I apologize.
Good morning, ma'am, and thank you. My name is Pleasure Matsepo. I am director responsible for financial disclosure.
Pleasure is the right person. She must give us the answer. Look, we are content. One, about the regret that we are, all of us, we are concerned about the regret of all the partners. The second disappointment, we are not happy about the fact that public service did not comply. It cannot be about leadership and all that, because when you take over office, you know, you have to know that has been the system that are supposed to advise you. So we're not happy about that. I felt I should say it upfront as a chairperson, and I know that members will also say it. Now, the biggest issue for us, again, Commissioner, if we are unable to reach 100% from 2011 since the introduction of this model. And remember, one of our policies is that we need to move towards the single public service. How are you then going to be able to rope in local government? Because now it's one of the recommendations that you want to make. Next year, we need you to report something about local government. You cannot just confine yourself in a small space. This model must go to local government. It must introduce to local government. You said 31st March is the closing date, eh? April. Yeah, now we want you to give everybody 2 months to work on the program, to work on this. There's no law that prohibits you to do that, I guess. Yeah. I'm saying there's no legislation that says you can't do that, that prohibits you from doing that.
The final date
is the 31st.
Okay.
Yes. Now, because now, remember when we do the things, it's not about disciplining people or trying to get wrong out of others, but it's about getting everybody moving towards one direction. Now, if you introduce it, at least you extend your time, then you must also have a tracking mechanism. I don't know if you do have that. To check military veterans, or they're not doing well, what could be the problem? Do they have a person dedicated to that? You understand? I think towards the end of the closing date, science will be there. You'll be able to pick up this one they're not doing well, this one they're not going to do well. So if you can introduce it early and also improve your tracking mechanism, I think we'll do better. I think definitely this year we'll get 100%. Yeah, if you introduce it early, I definitely think that we'll get 100%. But ministers who got the forms and never submitted, we want the minister to write to all of them. He must also write to them, like he said. No, minister must write to them, because it is also correct that the people might just generalize and think that everyone's doing business with government, whereas people have submitted their forms on time. It's not a good thing. And look, I'll pause there and allow you to raise clarification questions or comments. Marie, the season, Mina, Velma, Dende.
Thank you, Chairperson. I first want to start off by saying members of National Parliament are expected to submit the same. As we received it last week in our pigeonholes, our interest for the register for members of parliament. And it's quite serious. If you reach the due date, then it's been publicized in the media which members didn't submit. And after that, you go to the ethics committee. So, now we have to go the same route. If a person is sitting in a position like a DG, that's the most senior position in the civil service. If he doesn't submit his stuff on time, then we have to take it to the media and further action must be taken. There was one slide that stipulated 7 of them didn't submit it. I've seen it. But the words was used, some of them they came to the office. I'm not satisfied with that. I want to know of those 7 who didn't submit, and I want to know their names, please, and of which departments they are. And I will put out a brief statement and say who is the DGs that didn't do their responsibility. Because this is quite serious of people that's doing business with the government that now they don't want to submit their stuff because it could be picked up. That's why it's not submitted. Let's be honest here today. And it's a responsibility as the chairperson of this committee to scrutinize this now. And the last one I want to make is it is about the follow-up. Recently follow up if the stuff is not coming through. That's the responsibility of the official sitting there. If you see it slow and it's not coming through, then you write to them and say, because if you have got a paper trail that you actually alerted them that you haven't received this stuff and you follow up within the second week and the third week, then you can go with the route, you know, to actually get those people out of positions because they didn't deserve to sit for in that positions. That's just open along with it. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Chair. I want to...
Before you come in, can you also check for us how many DGs is not submitted? Seven. Seven. Okay. And we also launch departments. Yes. Alright. Okay. Message?
Thank you, Chair. On that point, there is a saying that a fish drops from its head. And if a DG doesn't, himself or herself, adhere to regulations such as this, which is a fairly simple request to complete, then it is just, I think, a sign of the bad discipline in the public service. And I want to agree with my colleague, such people should not be holding such senior office. Just a few questions. The first one is, have you got any specific reason for the drop in compliance from the 2 percentage points from 97 to 95%? The second one, who might accept the responsibility if a member of the executive authority do not enforce compliance by a DG and a senior management staff of the ministry for which he or she is responsible for? The third one, do you have any evidence of disciplinary steps having been undertaken due to people's failure to submit? A disciplinary step such as a written warning on somebody's file for non-compliance with these regulations. The next one is, how far are you with lifestyle audits, particularly with those senior management staff that are in positions where they can influence decisions such as the allocation of tenders, etc.? And lastly, members of Parliament will know that we not only need to disclose our own financial affairs, but that we also need to disclose certain facts regarding our family members, which is then put into a, what is called a confidential section. I see the form that the senior management members in the public service need to complete does not refer at all to the business interests of family members. And we do know that, you know, from court cases, etc., under investigations, that is the, I would want to say, the preferred route, or that is the way in which people defraud government, is by making use of front organizations or even family members, and then you have an agreement with that family member that, you know, they will see some of the claims that they have made from illicit transactions with you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair, and thank you for once more for the 2046. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Thank you, Honourable Chair, and also let me welcome the Undiluted 2014-15 Financial Disclosure Interest Report. That shows that there's no, has been no tampering. That's why also it does also acknowledge the downfall in terms of the improvement. But the point that I want to raise, Chair, is that I fail to understand where I'm sitting. If there are two provinces out of none that are able to comply, what makes the other ones unique or handicapped to comply? Because last year, no, 2014, when this committee took a decision to call the so-called, which we term them serial offenders, there was an improvement. But now, where did it go wrong the time around? Because I would hate if an impression is created that they want us to call them all the time here, so that they can score and make the seat on the carpet. And that's not our responsibility. Our responsibility is to ensure that the policies are complied to or are able to walk the talk through the administration. But I'm maybe back to Miss Pleasure. Miss Pleasure, we're not pleasure from our side. There's no pleasure from our side. We're actually humiliated. And I'm sure that as a responsible official, you will do your level best of the department, because the Public Service Commission does their level best, but somebody has to take it forward. I'm raising that also, Chair, because I want to bring the point that probably the DSA voting that also are part of the Naughty Adults. That last stage from DPME, they said that they will deal with the assessment of the cabinet, which is not our role, that one, of course. And I would suggest that the DSA must look at that and see whether is it not inserted inside of the executive authority now. Performance assessment contract that they have between the president and themselves. In terms of generic compliance with the protocols and the laws of the country as stated as may be, to ensure that the department is compliant on that. Because also the executive authorities, one also has to sign off, in particular the DGs and the premier for their provinces and all that. And I'm saying probably that one also. Because at one stage, I remember what we discussed on this net, we said also the School of Governance. But even that one is a long term for the next parliament administration to say, ensure that also the executive, without undermining their capacity, but to say that there must also be change or be a file that tells them the critical compliance issues that tends to disgrace this country. That if they don't pay attention to that, what does that mean? Because what Honourable Member, the first speaker is saying in terms of many shaming the newspaper, it doesn't give the result. It just gives the unnecessary pressure. And people must just do what is right and correct. Public service, because in terms of the Act of the Public Service also, it says that one of the things is the issue of making sure that there is honesty. I just want to take 112, 111 as well. It talks about in terms of the Chapter 10 of the Public Administration, 195 of 1A, a high standard of professional ethics must be promoted and maintained. If the DSA doesn't promote that, who's going to promote it? There is something wrong with pleasure. Be also efficient, economic, and effective use of resources must be improved. The disclosure doesn't say that we don't want to, but tell us so that we can stop it and manage the overspill thereof of the behavior. But if you don't want to disclose, then it becomes, somebody finds it, then it becomes a criminal record and it becomes more serious than what we have thought. Unfortunately, and I hope whoever is that also does appreciate this. And I just want to make a few recommendations, Chair. To say that from your side, on behalf of the committee, may you please write to the leader of business in Parliament to say, within the department, can he also assist us to ensure that the executive authority does do their bit? Because it's going to be very unfair for the DG to say that they have complied in terms of the turnaround time, and it's only the executive authority doesn't then make sure that the defense of May is being honored. It's going to be very unfair. That's also another, because if you name and shame them, you'll be naming and shaming them unfairly so, because you must also do that part. But secondly, Chair, I want to recommend that you write that letter and ask and make a plea, because that improvement that we think that we're going to get next year, we're not going to see it. If there's nothing that we're doing as an oversight body, extraordinary from the ordinary one.
That's a chair. The other one, I'm sure chair moving forward, because now, as you are reporting, it's the water under the bridge. That's the naming shame of the detail part of it. You do the same that you did in 2014, where you gave us the booklets, because those areas of compliance, there were about 6 or 7, I can't remember, those small booklets that have got the details in terms of the profits, which department, which official, and all the things that, when you told your book, you do also produce those documents, we get it, so that also we are able from our side to say, I know what you were saying, making reference with the KZF. It was directed from those bookends that we were able to get that one. So I'm just saying, just volunteer I want to give us. I know it's money, but for us also it will be helpful for us to do a very sound oversight. Chair, the only thing that the commissioner didn't talk to, which she answered to, is the matter of Eastern Cape, where the premier made a commitment and what happened thereof. Was there any improvement? What is the issue?
The other one, Chair, that would like to know,
if they give us, they give you the reason, and what else? And we live happily after, or we also cancel them so that they don't give us reasons but they comply. Because the reasons are not, they're not enough. Why did you do it?
Yeah, Chair, I think also which you did raise, also, a recommendation in terms of DPSA,
probably need to a separate study with DPSA, School of Governance, Treasury, the committee also, probably, because they can't make you as a state, people must comply. And that's the last one, because it can't be an excuse of teaching of ministers also.
Yeah, I think, let me stop there, but I just made 2 recommendations in essence that I hope will agree with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the PSC for your presentation. I just have a couple of questions. I would like to understand the process when the e-disclosure is done. It's emailed, and then who gets it? Does it go directly to the Public Service Commission, or does it go to each department's executive, and then they give that to you? How does that process work? Secondly, the public service and our other departments, planning, monitoring, and evaluation, are they involved in public service, or are they included in public service, or do we also get the statistics of that department of planning, monitoring, and evaluation? How many of them did not comply? And also the presidency, the staff there, how many did not submit, or are you not responsible for them? And then thirdly, my other committee is communication, and I see the Department of Communications are not here. Do they also, do you also get disclosures from the SMS staff members in the Department of Communication? I don't see any mention of them. But thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the report. On slide 18, the scrutiny on financial disclosures of some departments being not consulted to certain, due to certain reasons. Bullet number 2 talks about the premier of the Eastern Cape. I just want to check what happened after that. The office of the premier in the Eastern Cape informed the PSC that it will conduct the consultations with all the departments and submit reports to the PSC. Did it happen? The next question is on bullet 1, 2, 3, 4 regarding the state security agency. We also did not submit. What could be the alternative arrangements? What are the alternative arrangements done in order for them to submit? Because I'm noting a common defect between state security and the national treasury. We don't expect that from these two departments. So they might be suffering from self-conscientiousity, both of them. Then the last one on slide 18. The last bullet there says the SMF members of the Office of the Public Service Commission responded to the chairperson. I would like to know what kind of a response was it. And the circumstances are still the same. What are those circumstances that are still the same? Furthermore, one is interested in knowing how does the National Treasury justify compliance of 11% when they are the custodian of public funds? How do they justify it? One would like to know from the horse's mouth, instead of being a good example to the other departments, they don't do that. And then the next one is, what happens in cases where the officials complied with the framework? What happens in cases where the officials complied with the framework and the executive authority did not submit the timely the disclosure bonds? And my last question is to the director on the financial disclosures. Having experienced these programs over some years, will you check? What do you think is the best way to go about it? Because from what the colleagues have inputted, it becomes very clear that we are very, very keen on this, on making this thing a success. So what do you think is the best way of doing to going about it and through experience? And then lastly, to the PSC chair, have you ever thought of the extrinsic motivation to those that are able to dissolve timelessly, that they get some extrinsic motivation, a recognition of the good work that they have done? Maybe it will also add to their motivation or their keenness to do what is always correct. Thank you very much.
I think the first important question is the certain DG who did not comply. We also want to know as whether the PSC did approach the executive authorities who did not submit by due date. We want to know the role that you played, because you noticed that seven did not do that, so you must also tell us what have you done. Can we start with that question?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think with the seven, it might be very important that upfront to indicate that the DG of Arts and Culture during the period that we're reporting was suspended. So he was not the employee. When you're acting, you're subjected, but you report at your own capacity. So, yes, he did on his own capacity. Then where he is, let's say he's an EDG, he's reported as an EDG. Yeah. The defense one is the same DG who was in place even at the time of reporting. DG Dr. Ngulube. Human settlements during the period under review, it was at DG. It was Mr. Changana, because the DG Zulu was transferred to Human Settlement Agency. Yeah, NH is now the NH. I repeat, it was honorable. It was Mr. McBride. So you repeat? Yes. It was Mr. McBride. I'm trying to say he was suspended during the period under review, so he was not at work. I think that he was an 18 person. It's Mr. Hamanya, who reported at his level. Yes. And he submitted. With sports and recreation, yes, it is the same DG, Mr. Muyemi, even then. So he didn't. So in this regard, Mwedi. Mwedi. State Security Agency, it was an acting DG at the time. Even women, it was acting DG. So there was, it was not a fully fledged or appointed DG. So the DG was there, was a friend, is the one who is now with the Mpumalanga Provincial Administration.
Person report is very important. That is that reflecting on the report? Person report is very, it's very important. You see, the information that you are giving to us, it changes the whole picture now. Because now you wrote as if seven DGs did not submit. Whereas when you look at it, it's defense, it's sports, and human settlement. But then your report is wrong. We don't agree with that. Your report is wrong, it's misleading. No, it's too much. You must also write a statement to back that. It's misleading, it's wrong, because even during debate, this issue, it came, I know, one way or the other, members were able to raise it. So the report that you gave to us was misleading. Mare?
I think what you should be to clarify, in the case of full-fledged appointed DGs, and clarify acting DGs, and clarify who's moved. Mention them. Yes.
I'm saying at the writing of the report, that's where we talk now. When we debate, we rely on the information that you give to us. Then, if you give us misleading information, then we're going to say that. And then if, I want to be corrected as well. If there is no compelling matter that actually must be subjected to the same declaring process, then it means we must decline. It changes everything, then what is wrong? No, I'm not sure. What am I saying? If SNDG is not subjected to the same processes of reporting, you report at your own discretion, just for compliance because you are 18, you are not in a permanent position, then it changes the whole, what is this, calculation. It means even your calculation is wrong. Minor? Because you were saying it in the meeting now, the issue of Mr. Zulu from UN Settlement, you said he didn't comply last year, but now with the energy, you are not telling us what happens to his behavior in energy. So you, as you are responding to the chair, you must complete the lifespan activities of that individual because it will help. Because you are saying also in terms of the actors in those respective departments, they are still compliant to comply with the declaration, but you don't complete to say that. However, acting they are not at a DG level, but that is literally wherever there are specific posts, they have complied, which means that in terms of the calculation, the decline calculation technically is not correct. It's somewhere something wrong. Because also in terms of your GPSA, for an example, not coming back to Ms. Pleasure, to say that also you didn't complete the story, whether it's executive, I'm making an example with GPSA, whether it's executive authority that didn't, what do you call it, sign off, or if it didn't also follow the paper through. So even our recommendations that are making, they must be missing the target. I think then, okay, I 120% agree with you, Jay, that there is something that we need to say when we talk. Don't be contracted with the information, because also, it's a public meeting that we're sitting in. The paper will capture it, and the official in terms of morale and all those things, they'll go on a sick leave because they're depressed. I'm fairly so. But we're not intending to do that. Thanks so much, Jay.
When a person is expected to act in a position, that person becomes appointed official. So my understanding is that she becomes responsible. She takes all the responsibilities of that particular position. So to me, whether a person is acting or not acting does not, it's immaterial. He has to do the obligations of that particular position. Unless legislative wise, I might be wrong,
But I'm really of the opinion that if I am appointed as an acting DG, I assume all the responsibilities of a DG, pending the official appointment, so to speak. And I've got to be responsible for each and everything that has to happen. So it's immaterial whether I'm acting or not acting, but what is expected of me to do, I must do, unless you can state otherwise, Doctor.
I disagree with you, Mr. Chairman. Acting and being permanently appointed in a court is different. You might act for 2 weeks. You might have acted immediately after this process has passed. You understand? You might act during that process when you're supposed to comply, then you are removed to another position. So acting is, we cannot account for people like acting. I think that TSC, the way they're dealing with it is correct.
What does the legislation say in that particular regard? In the event of a person acting, are his responsibilities reduced? Is there a special arrangement that can go this far and not further? What exactly is the situation? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. I think there are two ways of acting. There are times where the official, say, person at the PSC, the position is vacant. So Mantona is acting, but with full responsibility of the ADD. But then when I complete my response, I'm completing still as a DDG, but it can't be reported as a DG. But there are times when one is suspended. These ones that were reporting to honorable members here, they were suspended for since 1 second. According to the regulation, even when I'm suspended, I'm still supposed, during the time of filing of this form, to complete my form and submit. That's according to the regulation. Yes, I must. Public service regulation. I must submit my form even when I'm suspended. So as we're saying, these ones were suspended. It was not vacant. They were suspended. They should have still suspended complete forms. Yes, they are. At the moment, SMS members, they have their responsibility. But say, for instance, if I'm also sick, I'm going on leave. I must make sure by the time I leave my work session, I've completed this form. Because if I don't do that, it's part of the misconduct that I've done that brought the name of the department into disrepute in this regard. So they know. Thank you.
Normally people are suspended with full salary, so the responsibility is ongoing. So, and that's what I must say is, mention the names in the report. I want the names in the report. That's the way it should be done. Just another 2 points. On a positive note, I think as chair, and we as responsible for our side, I think it will be very much from your side as chair, to just send a letter of congratulations to the Northern Cape Northern State for holding up our hands high, being submitted 100%, those two provinces, it should be done. And then, lastly, you make a point about the local government. You make a point about that. The starting point should be the appointment of Article 56 and 57, appointment in local government, that's the municipal managers and directors. I just want to make a difference there in the case of a municipality that is metro status, that has executive directors and directors, but they also, both of them fall that category as directors. So that will be a starting point at local government.
Thank you. It's mainly around those departments where they, in terms of statistics, where departments didn't quite reach 100%. There are some that lowered in terms of the increase that they had the previous year. So that's what contributed to the drop in terms of the overall total of the compliance rate. But it's one of those areas that we should continue to engage so that we can talk to them and improve that one. And I think that's what the person is saying, that going forward, we should emphasize this point. And I think we should be able to do that. In fact, I can say the following honorable chairman, between the two of us in terms of the PSA and Public Service Commission, that we are engaging with the respective accounting officers, and in fact the letter that the minister has returned to the EA, we are hoping that during the next 5 years, which is the one that is going on until end of May, will bring an improved statistic on the compliance rate, and it should be 100% hopefully. Yes, I think again on the point of who should take the responsibilities, I think according to the regulations, where DGs do not comply, it is the EAs who should take action against the DGs. So in this regard, the EAs should be able to do that. But perhaps the difficulty part is when the EAs are the ones who do not comply in terms of submitting to the Public Service Commission, I think for us, we say because we report the Parliament, it should be this particular Parliament that should engage with respect to EAs. In terms of the lifestyle audit, I think this is one area that the Public Service Commission considered and we discussed it, and it is still ongoing, but I do know that at one point during the discussion of this matter, it was regarded as a very problematic area, particularly around the human rights and the right of the people to trade, but it was considered that perhaps more work should be done in terms of developing the framework around the lifestyle audit, which still has to be consolidated. So it is still a work in progress. I'm sure Public Service Commission will come and engage the personal committee once it has engaged the commission. I'm going to have another update. I think when we generated a new form, or maybe let me put it this way, the PAMA, Public Administration Management Act, which the President signed in December 2014, but which it's still, the regulations are still underway in terms of development, is the one that begins to talk about some of the areas with regards to the family member. But there's still a lot of work in terms of the consultation with the stakeholder in this area, fine-tune areas that will lead to the regulations. So it's still under consideration. So I'm of the view that once it's concluded, this area will also be included in this area. I think, Honourable, you're right. I think the issue of 100% with regard to the provinces, it is one area that we should improve on. Because if two provinces can afford it, surely it means it can be done. And not only in the provinces, but also in the departments. It calls upon the Public Service Commission and the Department of Public Service Administration to engage thoroughly. And I think the point that Honourable Jefferson raised, that perhaps if we engage them earlier, having the 2 months of doing this work, will also allow us to identify those who haven't submitted to their EAs, and then long before the submission date, we have known those and then ensure that they are done indeed. I think the performance agreement of the respective EAs practically should include compliance with regulatory framework. So we don't know those performance agreements. We don't get to know what is in them, but surely they should include that. And if they include it, it must be one area that during the review by the President, the department's compliance is also a key issue in this regard. I think with regard to Eastern Cape, in terms of the commitment that they made, the Office of the Premier, it must be one area that we need to go back to our provincial-based commissioner, Commissioner Mafanya, so that we can double-check as to whether he has made any further follow-up on that, because this commitment cannot be made, and then we don't know what has happened. I think that will help us to say when in future what has happened to that part in terms of the department. I think those were the key issues, Commissioner.
We did make a comparative study. I think the committee has to get that report so that they can look at our recommendations. Where we did a comparative study of financial disclosures, where in other countries, Mozambique, I think, and Botswana, you disclose the business interests of your relatives, your spouse and children, and all these other things. I think we'll go back to the commission and we will liaise with the secretary of the committee so that that report can be given, so that you can look at the recommendations. If you are agreeing with them, then they can support that. The issue of any proof with disciplinary actions taken, we will get to the office and check, because the officials are the ones that get the response from the different executives. Because what we do, we scrutinize, we identify, we engage with the officials. Where we still feel that the minister has to engage, we write that, we send with the name and say this official is engaged in the following businesses of which we office and check all the responses from the ministers whether they is true. Then that information will be given to the committee. Then the booklet that was produced the last time of the individual departments, I think that still can be done when we go back to the office, because the information is there, it's in front. Because even with the letters that we write to the EA, we do attach the information. I think that we are going to be able to provide to the committee the booklet as proposed. When we consult, as I said, when given reasons that we still feel that we are not satisfied with the reasons, that's when we write to the EA to say consult the official so that the official can respond to you and the EA has to come back to us. Understanding the process of e-disclosure, I think because also Fleda is here, she can respond to that one. After I have presented, the department that you don't see them here is we have not written anything about those departments as the departments that comply. That's why you will not see Department of Communication and this and other departments. Here we just provide a department where there is something that is not right. With SASA, we have taken, with State Security Agency, we have taken a decision that once the Inspector General is appointed, we will require the Inspector General to scrutinize the forms and give us the information, because we can't accept members of State Security Agency because of the nature of the work that they do. So we will request the Inspector, hoping that that process will be finalized so that we get to know what's happening there. Because it might happen that we are not accessing their information, whereas there's a lot of conflict of interest. So we said we are going to liaise with the Office of the Inspector General for them to scrutinize, give us the information. That's the alternative, Babu Dombela, that we think that will assist us, because we also want to know what is happening there. Then with the issue of DGs, we will now be writing, because we took that where the PSR public service regulations say, even when you are suspended, you need to disclose. So the information that will be provided will be the name of the DG, the department, and we'll put some motivation next to that. Because I remember it's absent culture. There was a DG that I consulted with who said, I am resigning, 31st is my last day. But we did consult with as well. I think I leave to pleasure to explain the process of e-disclosure. Thank you. If you allow me, thank you, that Honorable Velma could get the process because she's the one that should get the process.
Okay, thank you, sir. Well, without making excuses for the PSA, I think I have to accept that we have to lead by example. But during this period, it was that period where there was a problem in terms of Minister Chavani passed away. It was during this period, and then there was a lapse in terms of... It was during this period, March 2014. This is the that other period, 2014, 15.
March 2014.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, Jay. Okay, let me...
That is not an excuse.
Yeah, that's...
Let us chip in on that one. I think you must complete your sentence because it's very unfair. Because when the late minister passed away, there was an acting minister. So it cannot be excused, because you must go further to say that because of that crossover, the executive authority, we didn't have time to bring him on board to sign those ones. I think we must finish our sentences because it's quite very unfair. Even now today, also, you must say that the DG and the immediate board are supposed to declare in terms of all the attitudes that are under the DSA. However, probably Center for Innovation did. It's the only thing it's caused off. You guys have to say, because what honorable member is going to do is going to tweet just that to say DSA didn't comply with disclosure of financial interest. And the blanket statement, you will be correct, but you will be unfair to those who have complied. Even including yourself, because you must tell us also who yourself did you declare. But also you must finish off the issue of Mr. Zulu from the human settlement, like you said, he didn't comply, now did he comply also, because you've mentioned this name. It must be yet now, because we shouldn't be seen that we are unfairly targeting him also as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chef. I have taken note of that. But I think the SNDG explained that the officials have submitted their financial disclosure forms on time. And that is why even with the NSGs, it's the case. They have submitted on time. It's just that the EA didn't submit on time to the Public Service Commission. Let me explain the process of e-disclosure. The first part of the process is that we get data from PESAL. And that's why you will hear the commission saying didn't submit even if you are suspended. Because when you are suspended, we don't take your name off the PESAL. Because as an honorable member has said, if you still get your salary, so we still count you as an employee. And then every other employee who on SMS level must then register to submit the disclosure. And thereafter, they submit their disclosure forms electronically. They get an acknowledgement of having submitted electronically. And once it is submitted, we have a middle phase which is supposed to assist the EA in verifying the information that has been submitted. We call that the ethics officer. So once the SMS number submits, it goes to the basket of the ethics officer. And then the ethics officer verifies and advises the EA on the member's submission. And then once it submits to the EA, then the EA has access to that information and is supposed to submit it to Public Service Commission.
Okay, thanks. I think there are two things that I think Arabuntovela, you raised the point of the PSC. What was that response that was consistently saying? I think what happened with the Public Service Commission, similarly, when the chairperson identified that the officials within the Public Service Commission who had potential conflict of interest, he wrote to all of those officials, and then the officials responded to the chairperson, each individual, explaining their situation in terms of the form of the president, the company's domain, is not trading, and so on and so forth. When we said the information should be the same, is that the information that explanation that the officials gave during the previous financial year, the previous financial year, and the one that we are reporting under, it was the same. In other words, they didn't have additional companies, but the explanation that they gave the chairperson was the same. So the chairperson is the EA of the office, consulted with his official, so that they can explain to him what does that mean when they put these companies under their name. That's what we're referring to. I think with regard to Mr. Zulu, I think it's very important, Honorable Somaya, you're very right. But then, because he was appointed in December 2015, to the Department of Energy, it will report under this current one. The one that will be calling us to report for this one that is now due by end of May. So it will come with that one. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
sir.
Thank you, I was interested in finding what is the remedy, in your opinion.
Thank you, Chair. What we have done, because once we with our experience of this past disclosure period, is that we monitor the submissions on the electronic disclosure system, and we have currently written to all departments and made them aware of the status in terms of whether there are people who have not yet submitted, And we are saying to the heads of department, you need to take action, but also ensure that these people submit. So we are hoping that will bring improvement in terms of the current financial disclosure period.
Let's wrap it up. I've noted two issues. One is that this model, it must be introduced to local governments, particularly for Section 57. With Section 57, which amounts to management, and also are directly reporting to them. So in other municipalities, it will be directors, others will be executive directors. Yeah, something of that sort, but those who are directly reporting to the municipal manager. But I write a letter to all those who have complied, especially those who have reached standards for them. I think it's not a difficult thing to do. We need to do that. Credit must be given with you. The process, we are extending the process now, right? To 2 months before the closing date. And then we also want you to improve your tracking system so that 2016-2017 will reach 100%, going forward 300%. And then there's also nothing that stops you from communicating about this, even if it's not during the time of submission. Trying to talk to your colleagues about this during your time of even before, far before that, you can still talk to them about it. If you've not really come during April and March, when supposed to be collecting this. The acting DG's role, it has to be clarified. Whether they supposed to what is this, comply or not. Whether they're supposed to declare or not. If they're supposed to declare, it has to be clear. Because at the moment, it's not clear whether they were told, whether they know, or whether they don't know. And then, also DG's that were other shifted to other responsibilities. It's two different things. Others they've been suspended, others they've been seconded to other responsibilities. Do we expect them to report about their previous and their current? Or if I do report as Zulu from human settlement to energy, what is expected of me? Do I report when I get to energy? Do you recognize my reporting within my current? Or do you expect me to report from, you understand what I'm saying, from my previous responsibility and the current regulation? That has to be clear. That is not clear. Those that are suspended, because they are suspended with all full benefits, we still want them to do that. We'll also ask the minister to write their EAs and ask them to do that, especially if they're still in our payroll. Going forward, we want the report. Your report writing, it should be as transparent and as inclusive as possible. It might give us much information, because remember, this is not a report that is not going to circulate between you and us. It's a public document. So give us as much information as possible. In the next report, we want names of EAs who did not comply, who received forms on time, and as a result, they've affected the following. In the next report, we want that at once, so that we don't have to be fined one thing. Next, the report must just be clear from the onset. We don't have to come in and you tell us about 7-7 what. We have to know that 7-7 is human settlement, is how it's health, so-and-so. You understand what I'm saying? And it has to be clear. We have to understand this one was shifted from this position to that, this one is suspended. Because if you don't do that, then it becomes confusing. Hence, earlier on, I said your reporting is misleading. So we depend on you giving us accurate information so that then we can assess whether we are transgressing or we are doing progress. But this time, because there's confusion about this service, that we don't know if they well, those that have been in the position, they know that even if they are suspended, they should be. You know that this also,
brings me to something. People who occupy DG positions, is there a cost? A cost? Do they attend any form of training? Just to, you know, those are the things that we need to introduce. You know, just to understand issues of compliance. This is a small matter, but it has got capacity to bring the integrity of government down. For them, it might look like a small matter. Why should I comply? But it has got capacity to bring the integrity of government down. You understand? I just want to recommend fully back on without being a question to say that there must be trained, attend a specific course that the NSG can come up with a course.
Yeah.
On that one, like King 3 report, special system that is deals only with compliance matters.
Mm-hmm.
Because of course, the accessory plans are from the legislatures. I don't want to say that people was like what, but to say that they had no respect and appreciation with the understanding of the meaning of non-compliance, what does it mean to them?
Mm-hmm.
In their career, also moving forward. I think that's a recommendation that we must say, Chair, build on their course. Thank you.
Not only to them, because they are non-compliant. It's not their problem now. It's the government's problem. It hits on the integrity of government. If one person doesn't comply, then it means he or she is doing business with government. Then it questions the integrity of all of us, Chairman, as people who are leading.
Chair, the compliance issues in these departments, is it dedicated to a particular person, or is compliance expected like everybody knows about? How is it done?
We suspect it's not coordinated. The way it's not coordinated. It's not coordinated. Even people who are being tasked with the responsibility to do that, I think somehow there's a problem. Yes, because if you say you did not comply because Minister so-and-so passed away, immediately after that minister passed away, there was an acting minister. And immediately after an acting minister, there's a minister, and you know that you have to comply to a certain period of time. And people did submit, you understand? So, we insist that there should be a cause.
From the response of the director, your pleasure, it's like she's doing other functions, including compliance. Or it's like it is expected that when officials comply, it is expected them to do it is within their arrangement of work, or that they should comply at a certain time. What I want to find out is whether is there a special person dedicated in a particular department that sees to it that all the people within the department comply. Is there such a thing?
I think sometimes it varies from one department to another. But sometimes in the offices of the DGs, it's a chief director who provides support to the DGs, where all this regulatory framework, particularly with regard to compliance, is the one who does them. Because there are many of them, yes, you are saying, honorable, but then they need someone to pull them together to ensure that by different times that they are supposed to be done, indeed the departments are complying with them. But in some instances, they fall between the cracks if there is no one who is holding them together in supporting the accounting officer. Because all of them, they are for the accounting officer, although they are done by different
okay. Now,
division.
A recommendation that you need to start reviving that. That's your responsibility. Then you'll be working with public safety in making sure that you revive and you make sure that each and every department there is a person or the work being done. They will have to, yeah. Let's leave that, let's not explain it here. Alright, I think I've summarized everything well. Is there anything that I've left out? Nothing, eh? The letter to, I suggested to must write, fall off because of this interrogation, because we might be wrong because we are not accurate. So there's no need
also,
for
now. You also sent the letter to the
leader of government, eh?
Business, yes.
Business,
yes.
Maybe the minister, not the minister, it's the deputy president.
No, I think maybe the minister should write that letter. No,
Wait a minute, it's fine.
We'll between you and the minister.
But we need to raise concern. We're not taking
about the current situation.
All right. Can you take us through the second agenda item?
Thank you, Chair. The second report is about the nature and extent of the protection of people, blowers and investigators in the public service. If I just give a history, that the PSC was mandated by Cabinet to manage the National Anti-Corruption Hotline. Whistleblowers report acts of corruption and maladministration through the National Anti-Corruption Hotline. The Cabinet memo provides that the PSC will from time to time evaluate the efficiency of the hotline system and recommend improvements when necessary. Furthermore, reference is made to Section 196. 4F1 of the Constitution that provides that the PSC may evaluate the application of public administrators, investigate certain categories of calls that would be received on the hotline and report to the executive authorities and legislatures. In preference of the above, the PSC in 2011 conducted a research on measuring the effectiveness of the National Anti-Corruption. In this research, it was found that often employees who blow the whistle on corruption are victimized and intimidated by senior management and have legal recourse. Even the PSC received numerous complaints from investigators about threats from senior management while conducting investigations. It is therefore evident that those who are affected by the investigations turn against the whistleblowers and the investigators. And whistleblowers and investigators need to be protected in order for them to report any case of alleged corruption without fear and favor. Therefore, the Public Service Commission conducted a research study on the nature and extent of the protection of whistleblowers and investigators in the public service and came up with feasible recommendations so as to contribute towards the protection of the whistleblowers and investigators. The objectives of the study, of the research study, were to analyze the available literature on the nature and extent of the protection of whistleblowers when reporting cases of alleged corruption in the public service, to establish the views of the whistleblowers on the current framework with regard to the protection of whistleblowers when reporting cases of alleged corruption in the public service, to establish the views of the investigators on the current framework with regard to the protection of investigators when conducting investigations of cases of alleged corruption in the public service, and to establish views of the appropriate body that will effectively deal with the protection of whistleblowers and investigators. The number of people who blow the whistle against corruption has declined. We see this because we are managing the hotline. In the past, you would receive a lot of calls, but now we can see that the number has declined when we look at the statistics. Many people do not have faith in the current framework, as it is ineffective in the protection of the whistleblowers and investigators. When we look at the business ethics survey of 2013 in South Africa, found that 65% of employees with knowledge of wrongdoing in their organizations prefer to remain silent for fear of reprisal and victimization. The finding is consistent with that of PricewaterhouseCoopers Global Economic Crime Survey for South Africa of 2013, which points to a downward whistleblowing trend. In 2007, 15% of the wrongdoing was discovered through whistleblowing. This figure dropped to 6% in 2013. And in 2007, the number of those who blew the whistle was at 25.3% and came down to 18.4% in 2011. However, the PSC analysis of the number of calls that came through the NAC indicates that there is still an increase in the utilization of the NAC, which has received 229,576 calls. You can look at the number. The number is that when people call, the system registers the call. Sometimes when you find out, it cannot be 229,576 cases that can be produced from this call. some calls lack information, lack details to warrant an investigation. So from this number, a total of 22,000 cases reports of alleged corruption were generated between the period 1 September 2004 to 28 February 2015. 20,000 cases were reported through the NAF by anonymous whistleblowing, and 2,000 were reported by identified whistleblowers. When we come to key findings, the views of the whistleblowers are that the current framework with regard to the protection of whistleblowers when reporting cases of alleged corruption in the public service is very weak. Case studies were obtained for 6 whistleblowers. We removed their names because we did have their names. Then because of they would have occupational detriment and also be victimized, we thought it best to remove their names so that they remain anonymous. These were whistleblowers who were severely affected because of them blowing the whistle and coming out in the open. The majority of them listed the following issues. Their families went through a painful experience, fearing for their safety. Some even developed medical conditions such as high blood pressure because of the constant harassment meted out of them. They were able to take out who are resistant to change and in peace. Their friends also deserted them, and they faced a heavy financial burden because of the loss of their jobs or bearing of legal costs, especially when the whistleblowing is unsuccessful. The views of the investigators are that there is no current framework with regard to their protection when conducting investigations of cases of alleged corruption in the public service. Whistleblowing legislation does not make any provision for the protection of investigators. It is therefore proposed that a provision should be made in the whistleblowing legislation that protects the investigators against occupational detriment in much the same way as it protects the whistleblowers. The whistleblowers, the investigators that we are talking about here, we are referring to the investigators that are working in departments because we have the minimum anti-corruption capacity where each and every department was required to have an investigation unit. So these are the investigators that we are talking about. The legislation should make it a serious offense for anybody who interferes with the investigation of impropriety. Interference in the legislation should be broadly defined to include any act that deliberately seeks to obstruct investigation into any impropriety they are investigating. There should be an appropriate body that will effectively deal with the protection of whistleblowers and investigators. Presently, we are not having a body. The current framework states that the disclosure could be made to the public protector, the auditor general, or any person or body as envisaged in Section 8 of the Protected Disclosure Act. Currently, the PSC has been mandated by Cabinet to manage the National Anti-Corruption Hotline. As such, the PSC received cases of alleged corruption reported by whistleblowers. Therefore, the PSC should be one of the bodies that the disclosure could be made. This is a recommendation because we have cases where an official will come and say, I have reported this case to you and anonymously, or I did disclose my name, but now I am suffering because I am not protected because I reported to you, but you are not one of the bodies that are mentioned to the PDA. So that's a proposal that we are making, of which this report has been submitted to the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development because they are busy with the amendment of the PDA. Our recommendation is that the protection of whistleblowers when reporting cases of alleged corruption in the public service should be enhanced. Action should be taken against employers who victimize whistleblowers. No previous liability was considered for employers who unfairly victimized whistleblowers. Criminal liability of the employer where detriment was suffered by the employee, worker, is therefore recommended, because as of now nothing is happening. Once you report, then they will formulate charges against you, you will be dismissed. The PDA should have a clause that provides for confidentiality of whistleblowers. The history of whistleblowers in this country is replete with examples of victimization in both the public and private sectors. The PSC is of the opinion that if the Act is to become an effective tool against corruption and maladministration, then the Act needs to be revised to include an obligation on the part of the employer to keep the identity of the whistleblower confidential. It also requires departments therefore to take the necessary steps to ensure such confidentiality. Protection of whistleblowers should therefore be enhanced and guaranteed. The PDA should provide for a public service disclosure protection tribunal. That's the body we are proposing, where people could go freely knowing that their identity will not be disclosed. The PDA should be amended to include this body that may put sanctions for any reprisal against employee or occupational detriment. The Public Service Disclosure Protection Tribunal should be empowered to make verdicts on the cases which could lead to reinstatement of an employee if he or she was suspended, compensation to the loss, refunding of any disciplinary measure, reinvesting financial losses incurred, awarding compensation for pain and suffering. Anybody who is found to have subjected whistleblower to occupational detriment should be imprisoned. So that the magistrate should determine the maximum number of years in prison based on the outcome of the court case. Consequential amendments to the PDA. When amending or strengthening the PDA, there should be consequential amendments. As one of the consequential amendments, the PDA should provide that employees should have appropriate internal procedures in place for receiving and dealing with information about improprieties. This goes hand in hand with the duty on the part of the employer to investigate. Employees who make protected disclosure may experience difficulties when they, in the absence of an obligation to give feedback or to be notified, are not notified of a decision not to investigate the disclosure or of a decision to refer the matter to another body to investigate or of the outcome of the investigation. Most of the time, an employee will report, but he will not be informed, or he will not be informed whether we are dropping this case, we are not going to investigate, we feel that there is lack of information. He will or she will report and nothing will happen. And we will see sometimes experience the things that he or she reported about continuing in the organization. Here we say the employer has to have an obligation to inform the whistleblower whether they will investigate or not, and also give feedback, and also give them the outcome of the investigation, because as of now, you report and nothing happens. A duty should be imposed upon the employer to investigate a disclosure, not just to dismiss any disclosure because it's so-and-so who has reported. There has to be an obligation that when something has been reported, an allegation of corruption, the employer has to investigate. He can start by doing a preliminary investigation to check whether we can investigate this or not, than just by disposing of the allegation. The current framework with regard to the protection of whistleblowers when reporting cases of alleged corruption in the public service should be strengthened. The Witness Protection Act should provide for the physical security for whistleblowers. A whistleblower may take on serious risks to his or her financial position, reputation and personal safety when disclosing wrongdoing in the public interest. After making a disclosure, a whistleblower may be subjected to threats and reprisal from fellow employees or another person as a result of that disclosure. Currently, the PDA does not have provision for physical security measures to protect threatened whistleblowers and investigators. That is no provision for 30-hour protection when raised by people who are involved in corruption, the provision for safe housing with advanced security measures to protect the threatened whistleblower from any harm, no provision for new identity to hide the name of the whistleblower who is threatened from alleged perpetrators. So the recommendations that we are making for the protection of the whistleblower are the same. We are making also the same recommendations for the investigators, of which I will not read because they are the same. If we can receive that, we are proposing an establishment of an appropriate body that will effectively deal with the protection of the whistleblower, that an investigator. The South African Law Reform Commission argues that there are a number of other state institutions supporting constitutional democracy, to whom it would be equally, if not more appropriate, to make disclosures, because we did consult when we were doing the study. The South African Law Reform Commission recommended the list of institutions to which disclosures may be made. So they mentioned these three, but still we feel that we are left out, of which we should also be included because of us managing the National Anti-Corruption. A disclosure should also be made to the PSC as it manages the National Anti-Corruption on behalf of government. Whistleblowers report any suspected cases of alleged corruption to the PSC anonymously without providing their details. In conclusion, corruption destroys societies and the institutions established to deliver quality services. It holds development at ransom. Various attempts are made to counteract corruption. It's not that the country is not doing anything, but we are trying to enhance what is already there. The challenge has always been to develop effective whistleblowing protection legislation. Countries all over the world have always grappled with the challenge of developing effective whistleblowing protection legislation and the protection of the investigators thereof. In terms of the security for whistleblowers and investigators, the PSC deemed it necessary that there should be an amendment to the Witness Protection Act to include the security measures for the whistleblowers and investigators. Thank you. Ngiyabonga, ngiyalebuka,
Khetha. Akhetha mama. You are proposing legislation or you want to make amendments?
We are proposing that amendments be made by the respective body. That's why after this report it was presented to the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, because the PDA resides with them and they've already started with the process of requesting amendments from people if they have info offense that has to be amended.
I want to understand why. What is the purpose of this report?
We did this report because we are managing the National Anti-Corruption Hotline. Many officials come to us to complain that when you are promoting the National Anti-Corruption, you sometimes say we need to report on allegations of whatever we see wrongdoing in our organization. And the other thing you say, we must report to the immediate supervisors before going out. But immediately you report to the immediate supervisors, you know that you are no longer safe.
Mm-hmm.
You are now going to be charged for something. That's why we came with this report, to influence the amendment of the PDA.
Okay. All right. So they are currently in the process of amending.
So what is the process?
What is the process?
I think the process of conducting public hearings by the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Constitutional Law.
On the same issue?
On the same matter.
Okay.
So the PSC was a let's generate a body of evidence that will contribute to what has been said at the particular Portfolio Committee to strengthen the PDA.
Because for me this is very urgent. Our role at this committee, what is expected?
Our role, because we report to you.
No, I'm saying our role.
Our role.
What is expected from us? Because if there's anything expected from us, then we need to decide on those bases.
Otherwise, this was just for information sharing.
To me, for information sharing.
But don't you know what we are doing and doing things in our group or not?
We support. We support the recommendation and the amendments that are putting forward. If we had a way, we would put time frames, but this is not within our scope of work. It's also not within your scope of work. You're just assisting. Maybe we'll participate at the level of public participation. That way we can get an opportunity also to make our own submissions. The station is by Ledoma.
Thank you, Tim. And thank you for this presentation on what is a particularly important topic, and it's clear from the figures that we've seen that whereas initially when these hotlines were introduced, people really pinned their hopes that they would enjoy protection and that it will be the necessary action, that they are fearing more and more for their futures and their position in the public service were they to report such irregular activities. So, thank you. I think from the chair, you actually made the proposal that we fully support the strengthening of the regulations, and that we also look at ways and means of how we can protect the careers of whistleblowers. Now, I know of a few whistleblowers that, as the commissioner has said, have resigned citing occupational detriment, that they were just unable to continue making a contribution in the position that they were. Now, we don't want those people necessarily to resign from the public service. If they could be placed in other environments where they can, perhaps, again, walk the straight and narrow and hopefully bring sanity to other of our environments in the public service, it would be great. So, not only, it's so difficult to prove that somebody has now made it impossible for you to continue with your work. So whereas I see that what the suggestion is that, it should become a punishable offense to victimize somebody, particularly a whistleblower, I think we must not only look at the stick side of it, but we must also look at the carrot side of it. How do we actually compensate people for taking on that risk of speaking out in terms of when they see wrongdoing? Because as this report quite rightly says, these people are often now tainted, they are seen as impimpies and so on. And we need to turn that around. They are the real heroes in many of these departments for the fact that they are willing to stand up against what is quite often a general trend and deeply inclined position in some environments. So if I could ask that we also look at not only trying to protect them, but also trying to almost encourage them to come forward with facts, and that we do not only see them as people that are slipping on their colleagues, etc., but that we really also honor them for bringing the public service back into line. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. We must honour them after there is a scientific proof that they were reporting something that it's there. Because I think there are those processes, because also we must separate the good eye proposal, but also it must be, can't be blanket for. But others, they've got their own personal issue. But I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that it must be a very clinical, clinical process. Chair, building on your point, we need a progress update in terms of justice, how far they are and all those, so that also when are those public hearings, we can see how we find ourselves also making contribution on that space. Because of there's nothing to do with us, but I think the most important point that I want to raise to DPS is to say that we don't need even to go to that space where there are whistleblowers. But of course, we are in the real world with human beings. But there is something that the PSA must do in terms of cleaning up the public service behavior, ethics, and moral, and all those other things. And which also, in terms of your KPI, the PSA, you have also committed to address to deal with those things. The issues also with the late minister and his old recipes, the forums that with the DGs and all the heads of departments that we were doing, and I'm sure the DG also
from DPSA is doing that, ensure that also we minimize that one. Because other reports, if you may find, is there are more of supply chain issues. So which means there is an issue that needs to be looked at in that aspect as well. And even issues of appointments with the education, the high profile issue with education also. If we are, as the heads of departments, we do have a really willingness and energy to manage, some of the things can be minimized. And also one of our priorities as government to build with a, to achieve again efficient, effective public services, but also caring and all those other things. Can you also make a recommendation that this also legislation must operate at the local government level?
It's not that prohibited, yeah?
No, yeah, it must also. This must also go to local government, yeah. You see, we're moving towards a single public service, and then, yeah, it's through this small program that will ultimately, it will take time to get there. But for as long as we get programs that we think might be of benefit for local government, we'll refer them. So today we made two progressive recommendations to local government, yeah? Yeah. All right. I guess if there's any other issue. Okay, Delma wants to raise something. Delma?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to relate the same question to the whistleblowers issue. If SMS staff declare and they did disclose that they have an interest in the company or they registered and they still proceed to get government funding for this company, does the Public Service Commission investigate and find out, yes, they did disclose, but they still proceed to get the funding, does the Public Service Commission make a report with charges, or do they wait for that department to charge, or do they wait for a whistleblower to come forward? Which of the processes do they set up?
Okay.
Well, I think the challenge we have is that the current regulation in terms of financial services without framework, it says they have the business but decade. But the PAMA, which is Public Management Public Administration Management Act, is the one that will say when you have a business, you decade and you don't do business in government. So currently, we are required, officials are required to declare whatever they have. So once it's known, it's fine. You are not prevented to do so. But the PAMA, once it kicks in, it will definitely say you declare and don't do business with government. Yes.
You declare and don't do business with government. Finish and stop. Okay. All right. Members, colleagues, that brings us to the end of our meeting. I think we had a fruitful meeting. And next year, disclosure, 100% deal. Sure. All right. Bye.